Chapter 25. As Mr. Miller had always stated the time for the coming of the Lord to be about 1843, he was now pressed to state the point of time more definitely. He said the Lord would come some time between the 21st of March, 1843, and March 21, 1844. Before the close of this memorable year, conferences were appointed to be held by brethren Miller, Himes, and others in the cities of New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Washington, to re-arouse and give last warning, and if possible wake up and warn the household of Caesar. It was a season of thrilling interest to all who truly loved the Second Advent doctrine. About this time I sold my place of residence, including the greater portion of my real estate, paid up all my debts, so that I could say once more that I owed no man anything. For some time I had been looking and waiting for an open way to go down south into the slaveholding states with the message. I was aware that slaveholders in the South were rejecting the doctrine of the Second Advent, but a few months before had ordered brethren Storrs and Brown from the city of Norfolk, Virginia, and I was told that if I went south the slaveholders would kill me for being an abolitionist. I saw there was some danger, but imperative duty and a desire to benefit them and unburden my own soul overbalanced all such obstacles. Brother H. S. Gurney, now living in Memphis, Michigan, said he would accompany me as far as Philadelphia. The steamer on which we took passage from Massachusetts had much difficulty in getting through the floating sheet ice on the last end of her passage through Long Island Sound and Hurl Gate to the city of New York. In Philadelphia, we attended some of the crowded meetings of Brother Miller and others. It was truly wonderful to see the multitudes of people gathered to hear him preach the coming of the Lord. Brother G. now concluded to accompany me south. We reached the city of Annapolis, Maryland, by the way of Washington, and crossed the Chesapeake Bay through the ice to the central part of Kent Island, on which I had been cast away some 27 winters before. At the tavern we found the people assembled for town meeting. The trustees of two meeting houses who were present were unwilling to open their doors for us and intimated the danger of preaching the doctrine of Christ's coming among the slaves. We applied to the tavern keeper for his house. He replied that we could have it as soon as the town meeting closed. We then made an appointment before them that preaching on the Second Advent would commence in the tavern the next afternoon at a given hour. Said the keeper of the tavern, "Is your name Joseph Bates?" I answered, "Yes." He said that he remembered my visiting his father's house when he was a small boy and informed me that his mother and family were in another room and would be glad to see me. His mother said she thought she knew me when I first came to the house. The notice of our meeting soon spread over the island, and the people came to hear and soon became deeply interested about the coming of the Lord. Our meetings continued here, I think, for 5 successive afternoons. The mud was so deep on account of a sudden thaw that we held no evening meetings. The tavern was a temperance house and accommodated us much better than any other place we could have found in the vicinity. At the commencement of our last afternoon meeting, a brother who had become deeply interested in the cause called Brother G. and myself aside to inform us that there was a company about 2 miles off at a rum store preparing to come and take us. We assured him that we were not much troubled about it and urged him to go into the meeting with us and leave the matter in their hands. The people seemed so earnest to hear that my anxiety increased to make the subject as clear as I could for them, so that the idea of being taken from the meeting had entirely passed from me. But before I had time to sit down, a man who was at the meeting for the first time, whom I knew to be a Methodist class leader and one of the trustees that refused us the use of their meeting house, arose and commenced denouncing the doctrine of the Advent in a violent manner, saying that he could destroy or put down the whole of it in 10 minutes. I remained standing and replied, We will hear you. In a few moments, he seemed to be lost in his arguments and began to talk about riding us on a rail. I said, "We are all ready for that, sir. If you will put a saddle on it, we will rather ride than walk." This caused such a sensation in the meeting that the man seemed to be at a loss to know which way to look for his friends. I then said to him, "You must not think that we have come 600 miles through the ice and snow at our own expense to give you the midnight cry without first sitting down and counting the cost. And now, if the Lord has no more for us to do, we had as lief lie at the bottom of the Chesapeake Bay as anywhere else until the Lord comes. But if he has any more work for us to do, you can't touch us." One Dr. Harper arose and said, "Kent, you know better. This man has been giving us the truth and reading it out of the Bible. I believe it." In a few minutes more, Mr. Kent shook me heartily by the hand and said, "Bates, come and see us." I thanked him and said my work was so pressing I did not think I should have time, but I would come if I could. But we had no time to visit only those who had become deeply interested and wished us to meet with them in their praying circles. At the close of our meeting, we stated that we had the means and were prepared to defray all the expenses of the meeting cheerfully, unless some of them wished to share with us. They decided that they would defray the expenses of the meeting and not allow us to pay 1 cent. On leaving Kent Island, we passed along on the east side of the Chesapeake Bay, called the Eastern Shore of Maryland, to the county town of Centerville, about 30 miles distant, where we had sent an appointment to hold meetings. We chose to walk, that we might have a better opportunity to converse with the slaves and others, and furnished them with tracts which we had with us. On reaching Centerville, we inquired for a Mr. Harper. On arriving at his store, we presented our introductory letter and were introduced to Judge Hopper, who was engaged in writing. A number of men and boys came crowding into the store, apparently full of expectation, when one of them began to question us respecting our views, and soon came to the point that Christ could not come now because the gospel had not been preached to all the world. I replied that it had been preached to every creature. When he showed his unwillingness to believe, I inquired for a Bible and read the following: "If you continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, which you have heard, and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven." Colossians 1, verse 23. Said the man, "Where are you going to preach?" Judge Hopper said, "In their new meeting house." "Well," said he, "I will come and hear you." Mr. Harper invited us and the judge to tea and to spend the evening. The judge had a great many questions to ask us respecting our faith, and at about 10 o'clock insisted on our going home with him to spend the night. Before reaching his house, which was about a mile out of town, said he, "Mr. Bates, I understand that you are an abolitionist and have come here to get away our slaves." Said I, "Yes, Judge, I am an abolitionist, and have come to get your slaves, and you too. As to getting your slaves from you, we have no such intention. For if you should give us all you have," and I was informed he owned quite a number, "we should not know what to do with them. We teach that Christ is coming, and we want you all saved." He appeared satisfied and pleased with our reply, and in a few moments more we were introduced to his family. The judge and Mr. Harper were the principal owners in a new meeting house, as I understood, just erected for a new sect called the New Sides, which had seceded from the Methodist Episcopal Church called the Old Sides. These two friends stated that their new meeting house was free for us to occupy. We commenced there the next forenoon with a large congregation. Judge Hopper invited us to make his house our home during our series of meetings. Our meetings in Centerville, Maryland, continued about 3 days with much interest. Many became deeply interested to hear for the first time about the coming of the Lord. Judge Hopper was very attentive and admitted that he was almost persuaded of the correctness of our position. We were told that one of his slaves was deeply convicted and professed to have been converted during our meetings. The second day of our labors, the judge arrived at his house before us and was engaged reading his paper by the last mail. It was the Baltimore Patriot. When we came in, said he, "Do you know who these were?" and commenced reading in substance as follows. Two men who came up in a vessel from Kent Island were in at our office and related circumstance respecting two Millerites that were recently there preaching about Christ's second coming and the end of the world. When threatened with riding on a rail, they replied that they were all ready, and if they would put a saddle on the rail, it would be better to ride than to walk. The editor then added, "The crush of matter and the wreck of worlds would be nothing to such men." We replied that such an occurrence did take place when we were on the island a short time previous, and that probably we were the individuals alluded to. He laughed heartily and pressed us to relate the circumstances while his family were gathering to the dinner table. He then inquired which way we were going. We stated that we should like to go to the next county seat northeast. He gave us a letter of introduction to a friend of his, a lawyer, who had charge of the courthouse in his absence, telling him to open the house for us to hold meetings in while we stayed. We arranged our appointments for five meetings and sent them to the lawyer to publish, who was also editor of their village paper. The name of this town was Chester, I believe, distant about 25 miles. One of our interested hearers sent his private carriage to convey us on our way. We were walking just before we came to the village, and met a man on foot seemingly in great haste, who stopped and inquired if we were the two Millerites who were going to preach in that place. We answered in the affirmative. "Well," said he, "I have traveled 13 miles this morning to see you." As he stood gazing on us, I said, "How do we look?" Said he, "You look like other men." His curiosity being gratified, we passed on and saw him no more. On arriving at the tavern for dinner, the tavern keeper slipped the village paper into the hand of Brother Gurney for him to read the notice of the Miller meeting, supposing that we were the strangers expected. The notice closed by hoping that the old women would not be frightened by these men's preaching about the end of the world. After dinner, we called to see the lawyer at his office, where we were entertained for hours listening to his skeptical views about the Second Advent and answering his numerous questions. He was very punctual at all our meetings and became so deeply convicted of the truth that he was as much, if not more, alarmed about his preparation for the coming of the Lord than the old women he was so troubled about. The people came out to hear and listened attentively, particularly the slaves, who had to stand on the backside of the white congregation and wait until they had all passed out. This gave us a good opportunity to speak with them. So we asked them if they heard what was said. "Yes, massa, every word." "Do you believe?" "Yes, massa, believe it all." "Don't you want some tracts?" "Yes, massa." "Can you read?" "No, massa. But young Mrs. or Massa's son will read for us." In this way, we distributed a good number of tracts with which we had furnished ourselves from Elder Himes in Philadelphia. They seemed delighted with the Advent hymns. They heard Brother Gurney sing the hymn, "I'm a Pilgrim and I'm a Stranger." One of the colored men came to our lodgings to beg one of the printed copies. Brother G. had but one. Said he, "I'll give you a quarter of a dollar for it." Probably it was all the money the poor fellow had. He lingered as though he could not be denied. Brother G. then copied it for him, which pleased him very much. There were three denominational meeting houses in the village where the people met to worship. Out of respect to them, we gave notice that we should hold but one meeting on Sunday, and that would commence at candlelight. The next morning, while mailing a letter, the postmaster said that the ministers of the place were so enraged about the people's going to our meeting that they were talking about having us imprisoned before night. I said to him, "Please give them our compliments and tell them that we are all ready, The jail is so nearly connected with our place of meeting that they will have but little trouble to get us there. We heard nothing more from them. Our fears were not so much about going to jail as that these ministers would influence the people to shut us out from giving them the Advent message. But the Lord, in answer to prayer, suffered them not to close the open door before us, for our meetings continued without interruption. The last meeting was deeply interesting. The Lord helped us wonderfully. Our subject was the woe trumpets of Revelation 9, proving in accordance with Mr. Litch's calculations that the sixth angel ceased to sound, and the second woe passed in August 1840 with the fall of the Turkish Empire, and that the third woe was coming quickly, when great voices would be heard in heaven saying, "The kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ." When we closed the meeting, the white people remained fixed and silent. The poor slaves stood behind, gazing and waiting for their superiors to move first. There sat the lawyer who has so faithfully warned the old women not to be scared about the preaching of the end of the world. He and one or two others had been taking notes of our subject. We sang an Advent hymn and exhorted them to get ready for the coming of the Lord and dismissed them again. They remained silent and immovable. Brother G. exhorted them faithfully, but they still remained silent and appeared as though they had not the least desire to leave the place. We felt fully satisfied that God was operating by His Holy Spirit. We then sang another hymn and dismissed them, and they began slowly and silently to retire. We waited to have some conversation with the colored people. They said they understood and seemed much affected. When we came out of the courthouse, the people stood in groups, almost silent. We passed along by them, bidding them goodbye. The lawyer and the principal of the academy were watching for us and walked with us to the hotel. Both of them were powerfully convicted and apparently subdued. The teacher had argued with us several times to prove that this movement was all delusion. But now he began to confess. The lawyer seemed now to ask questions for himself and was so intent on the subject that he detained us in conversation at the side of the hotel until we were compelled by the cold to go into the fire. We exhorted him to confess all his sins and give his heart to the Lord. The principal of the academy said, "Now, brethren, I want you to go with me to my room, where we will have a good fire. I want to talk more about this work." He there confessed how skeptical he had been and the opposition he had manifested, and how he had attended the meetings and taken notes on purpose to refute the doctrine. "But," said he, "I believe it all now. I believe with you that Christ is coming." We labored and prayed with him until after midnight. We were told next morning that some of the inhabitants were so powerfully convicted that they had not been in bed during the night. Two men who stopped at the hotel said they had come some 30 miles on horseback to attend the meetings. While here, the way opened for a series of meetings some 13 miles northward at a place called the Three Corners. We were told that we had better not go, for the tavern keeper was a rank Universalist and would oppose us.